Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Today I have a guest who wrote a book called Parasols Divine, Michelle Richard. And if you'd like to speak to her regarding her book, please call in at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460. Or you can post a question in the chat room and go ahead and read it on the air. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well,
nice
I guess
to be there.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I guess to begin with, let's talk about, tell us about yourself, and then I guess tell us how you come to write this book.
I started writing probably about 2 years ago. I didn't grow up saying, oh, when I publish a book or when I write a book or anything like that. I was just a regular girl, I guess. Then, I hit my teenage years, and of course, you tend to hide that kind of stuff because it's not cool. So life went on, and I was just doing my own thing. I was always a big reader, though. Even in my teens, I was a big reader. Roughly about 2 years ago, I went on a summer vacation, and that was actually when I started writing my first book. I was sitting on a beach in Virginia Beach on an army on a base, and this idea of a teen pregnancy story hit me. So I sat down and wrote my first book, Marked by Destiny. Then one of my friends in New York said, "Oh, enter it," and I'm like, "Well, maybe, I don't know." She's like, "Just enter it." So I entered that, and I entered a second book, Marked by Faith. And after I didn't win, but after the contest was over, they had selected they wanted to take Mocked by Destiny, which, of course, flabbergasted me because I was like, okay. Wasn't something I planned, but that's more than fine. So I ended up publishing that one, followed quickly by Mocked by Faith and Mocked by Faith Healing the Faith. They're both one's a young adult and one's a contemporary romance. But I had this science fiction kind of nipping at my heels, saying it wanted to be written. So I took the plunge and I just decided, you know what, I'll just write it and we'll see what comes out of it because, you never know when you're crossing genres what's going to happen. So I wrote it. I let it come out the way I wanted to. And lo and behold, Parasols Divine Intervention was born. So, yeah,
that's how it came to be.
Well,
tell us about, before we get into the story itself, just kind of highlights, and I might ask you to just read some favorite passage out of the book for us. But how, this is your third book, how are these ideas coming to you?
Actually, this is my fifth book.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It's funny. I get ideas for books in some of the weirdest places. I mean, the idea for Mocked by Faith actually started at the supermarket. I was walking through the freezer section and, I saw this little World Cup and it just kind of said to myself, geez, I wonder if they had their marriage arranged. Okay, that was the beginning. By the time I got home, I had the whole book in my head, and I just had to sit down and type it out. So that's so it could be anywhere. And like I said, Mocked by Destiny, I was sitting on the beach, and the idea just jumped in my head, so I ran with it. And so it's always just a matter of where I am and what I'm doing at the time. Anything can induce a new idea.
Wow. So when you do that, when those ideas, like, for example, think that marriage was arranged and you start thinking, so it's the thoughts and your curiosity behind the thoughts that kind of birth an outline of what you want to write about.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. There's no planning. I don't sit down and I go, okay, the world needs a book about, you know, it just kind of hits me, and whatever the idea is, I just kind of go with it. Because when it comes, when you write, you have what they call plot bunnies. And when you get a plot bunny, sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes you get one chapter out of it, and then other times you get a whole book out of it. So
wow.
You just kind of have to let the story brew or build on its own and see if it's actually going to go anywhere. And with Parasols, there is so much to the story that even though I wanted to put it in to this book, it sort of had to be broken up by different, like the first book concentrates on the love and connection between two opposite Parasols from other opposite sides of the warring. And so the whole book is basically just about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the next book in this series, it's going to be more about explaining what the two sides and why they're different and why they're fighting. You, if that makes any sense. I didn't want to mix them in with the romance, in with the warring, because then you're starting to get confused and you're bouncing between, you know, okay, where were we? What were they thinking? What were they talking about? So basically with this series, it's broken up by actual reasonings to it. So this one is about their instant connection. The next book is about the two separate sides, what they know about each other, what they don't know about each other. And by the time you get to the third book, it's the actual confrontation between the two sides. And how,
okay.
You know, what comes out of it, kind of story.
Is that
so,
a criteria?
Yeah,
okay.
Hmm?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Is that a criteria when you look at science fiction? What elements need to be in this particular story?
With science fiction, it's a little harder than like when I was writing regular the contemporary or the young adult romance, because with science fiction, if something isn't, say, of this world, you kind of have to explain what it is in a little bit more detail than, like, you would say walking to the corner store. Because when you're walking to, you know, depending on whatever your storyline is, in Parasols, it's a government facility that tests on Parasols, which Parasols is a species. And it's like an evolutionary step above the human race, but yet they're treated a step below the human race. The government likes to, you know, treat them like they're insignificant and kind of like mutants and strange, and they're freaks and they kind of are picked on and mistreated. But it's funny is because they're actually higher than we are because of their special abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're writing science fiction, you really have to be more entailed when it comes to things that aren't common day here.
Wow. So, you know, I can go back in time, maybe just a little slightly older than you, and I remember I wish we can trade. But anyway, for example, I loved science fiction as a kid, and I wanted to be like – to be the science fiction writer. I mean, I love Star Trek. I love Space 1999. I love Doctor Who. I liked time travel. What I'm getting at, all those things that inspire you, like, for example, you're exposed to, and it's kind of easier to come out, okay, how am I going to get this person to do this? Because I have a foundation to build from, and I've seen one extreme to another. Have you taken all of, like, for example, from me, did you take all of that information that was already out there and say, hey, I have an idea with Star Wars and and Superman and all of that, and I'm going to take all of that, and I'm going to make my own characters because now I have an extreme from one way or another to get there. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but it wasn't something I did because basically I usually tend to write things that are slightly, I want to call them quirky or off the normal beaten path. Like, there are not a lot of books out there about teen pregnancy, arranged marriages, and there are not a lot of people who write about basically, you know, lowering the humans down the food chain. But again, you know, what I basically drew on were, it's going to sound a little weird, but I basically was more things like, now I'm going to date myself here because I don't know if you remember the old TV show Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast in the 80s, yeah.
Right, but I absolutely loved when I was trying to separate, like I was trying to come up with the parasols and I was trying to separate them. I knew Shane would be okay. He would be in the government, a government facility. I didn't necessarily draw on like Area 51 for his side because basically I was doing more of the thing like more like an internment camp kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're basically they are ordered around, they have to work for the government because, you know, that the government controls them and so forth. But like with the parasols on the freedom side, I needed to give them a place where they could live that were off the human path. And that was a little harder. And that's when I came up with the idea if they lived underground. Then they would be separated from the humans. The government wouldn't know where they were. So that's kind of how their underground complex became, was because I had remembered things like when I was a kid, remembering, oh, remember when, you know, Catherine would go into the tunnels and so forth. So that kind of sparked the idea that, okay, there are places that people forget to go to. I mean, even watching movies like Teenage Ninja Turtles, when the turtles moved their home into the abandoned railroad tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So it was little things like that I drew more on, that I put into the story that I drew on and built into that. But less about things like, I mean, I've actually had a reader tell me Parasols was X-Men only cooler. And the funny part was, I like X-Men, but I was never a big fan of it. So, but yeah, I didn't start out with, okay, I'm going to take X-Men and twist it, because it's just not how I write. Basically, it has to come fresh, new, different, for me to actually sit down and want to do it.
So when it comes to, for example, if we back up a little and talk about, do you have a villain and
there are several villains.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Yes, in this book, you don't quite know who's the good, the bad, and the dictators. And that's kind of where the problem is. It's one of the reasons I told you that it's kind of separated by, like this part, this book here is about the romance. The next book is about the fighting, because that's when we're going to get into actually figuring out who the dictators are and why they're trying to separate them. And basically, it's basically a story about what happens when neither side is right.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, a lot of people, I hope this doesn't give out a spoiler alert, a lot of people think General Ritter is going to be one of the mean, bad guys, dictators, but it turns out that there's someone working around him that is actually pulling the strings on the government. As far as on the freedom side, Parasols, Damien is, he's kind of a showmaster. I want to compare him with the men in the circus and the big hats and the, you know, wanting you to think everything is just all rosy, and behind the scenes, it's not so much. He has a lot of secrets that he keeps from everybody. and they're not always good secrets.
Wow. When you, since this is dealing with the government and these villains themselves, do they have any, like, any supernatural powers, or kind of tell us, without giving the story away, what type of, just a hint on what special abilities, or do they have any special abilities?
They do. Actually, all parasols have one. It varies from, you know, through the groups. Basically, half of, well, it's not necessarily counted, but they're split between parasols who are born with their powers active and parasols who have their abilities or talents or powers, whatever you want to call them, turned on when they hit puberty.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, there's two separate ways to be, you know, become a parasol. Either you're born that way or you grow into it. And basically, like some of the different ones, shame produces red and orange flames from the palms of his hands. He basically burns everybody he touches because mm-hmm. he's superheated. Angelique is the complete opposite. Angelique produces white, blue, electric flames from the tips of her fingers. But she's icy cold, kind of like dry ice
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So they're what, in the book, they're what are called polar opposites because their abilities are, even though they're in the same group, they're the complete opposite of one another.
Mm-hmm.
To have, their souls are divinely linked in the book. And that's basically in a divine strike of lightning that hits them in the chest and merges their soul into one. So without the other, they cannot survive. And the downfall to that is they're on opposite sides of the war. So what do you do when you can't live without a person, but you hate that person? You
wow.
were raised to hate that person, you know what I mean? So it draws into it a lot of interesting aspects. But now you're stuck with the one person you wanted to, you know, capture and lock away. It's now the person you can't be, you know, too far away from. So it's kind of intriguing.
Wow. So when you put all these characters together, and just like the book you have in the past, what inspired you to come with the title itself?
That title was the hardest. I was sitting at my kitchen table trying to figure out what was the best way, the best title to give them as far as their species went. And then it sort of just hit me, paranormal souls, abbreviated to parasols.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they became the species. Then I had to figure out the subtitle, which was Divine Intervention. And that was easier because the divine event that links their souls is basically an intervention telling them it's time to stop fighting each other and start fighting together. So it became a Divine Intervention.
Wow.
The next one is Double-Edged Swords, which kind of explains the fighting and how neither side is exactly right. So basically your title kind of has to give a hint to what's inside the book. And that's where the Divine Intervention and the Double-Edged Sword and Dividing Lines, Dodging Damnation. Those will be the future name titles of future books in the series. So, yeah, it always has to kind of reflect what's going to be in the book itself.
Wow. So when you finally got Parasols, it's divine itself, how did it speak to you, if that makes sense?
It was obsessive. Oh, my Lord. It just wouldn't stop. I was out actually driving home when I got hit with the idea. And literally by the time I got home, I sat down, I rushed to my computer and started typing. And it was just every time I said, okay, I typed what I saw in my head. All of a sudden a new idea would pounce on me and I'd be like, okay, I got to write that too. And I just would keep writing and writing and writing. It's kind of how I write all my books is once I start, I become obsessed with having to get to the end of it.
Okay. In your career, how long have you been publishing?
A year ago in February. A year ago last February. That's it.
And you got 5 books under your belt already?
Mm-hmm. I write a lot.
Okay.
Actually,
so
I have a 6-book written.
A year and a half? Wow.
Yeah, I actually have a 6-book written. It has to go through edits before it can be published. But yeah, I'm actually working on another book too as well, and working on one of the books we put out was an anthology, which was me and 2 other authors basically wrote a 20,000 word short story. It's not a teaser. It's actually a full story in itself, even though it's written in a miniature form. And we put that out. That went out in February. We're doing another one for the summer, so I'm more than halfway done with that one. And like I said, I've already started another book, and I have another one waiting to go through edits. I write a lot. My kids are now in, you know, starting middle school and so forth. So, you know, the whole aspect of them needing mommy really doesn't exist anymore except for rides. Mom's the taxi driver now. So basically, you know, when they're at school for, you know, 7-8 hours, that's straight writing time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they go to bed at, you know, 8-9 o'clock, again, I don't watch TV. So where most people sit back and throw on a reality show, I would rather sit here and write a book. So my evening hours are, again, you know, spent with writing more of it. So I can write anywhere from 8 to 18 hours a day, just depending on the day.
So it just runs out of your soul about these stories and topics. Then versus some people, do you ever get writer's block?
I haven't yet. Because where I'm usually working on more than one book at a time, It kind of alleviates that, because if I get stuck on one story, I just put it aside and I go and work on the other story. And then when the idea finally clears itself in my head, I pop back. So, and also, I tend not to write, like a lot of writers write in a timeline, which mm-hmm. means they write A, B, C, D, E. And when I'm writing, sometimes I write A, E, D, C, B.
Then you put it together.
And yeah, so, I mean, I could have, like, 5 different chapters I'm working on at the same time in one story alone, which I know I've been told is a little bit, you know, different from most writers. But basically, I just let my mind decide whatever's going to be written. If I have that idea, then that's what I sit down and I concentrate on. And then when my idea shifts, you know, it's funny, is I will actually get up and go to the supermarket if I get stuck. Because for some reason, just walking through the supermarket, aimlessly not thinking about anything, I can sort of work it all out on my own. And by the time I get home, I can usually sit down and finish whatever I was stuck on.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, so, if we back up for a second, I mean, these things just comes to you, and for example, when you come to the very end, how do you get to the very ending of a story? Do you kind of juggle, say, hey, this is how I'm going to end it, or it just comes naturally, hey, boom, this is it?
I've done both.
Okay.
I've really done both. Now, like, with Parasols, as I was writing it, I didn't necessarily plan on the end. I knew it was going to end with them escaping the government facility, but I knew nothing more than that. So basically, I just wrote until I got there and let the end play out on its own. And then when I just hit a certain point, I'm like, okay, that's it. Now, with the short story I'm writing right now, I already have the end typed out. And I'm only still writing back at chapter 5, even though the last chapter is already typed. So like that one, I knew where it was going to end. In advance, I had the whole scene played out. So I have it now typed out and saved and ready. But with other stories, I just write until it feels like it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll write the end if I see it, whichever comes first.
Wow. So how did you get, when you wrote your book, how did you get a land a contract with the publisher?
Yeah, I you know, that was the funny part was I didn't actually go out looking for one. Like I said, I'd entered a contest at the urging of a girlfriend. And so when the contest ended and I didn't win, I didn't think anything of it. There was no, okay, I'm going to pull the story and send it to all these publishers. It was nothing like that. I was more than satisfied that I had written it, and I was happy with it. And all of a sudden, they were like, we want it. And I was kind of like, wait a minute, I just supposed to like get denied like, 20 million times before someone takes it. And so, yeah, I don't exactly know how that kind of all happened. It just kind of did. And I'm thankful for that it did, because Once I published the first book, I started to realize that I could really enjoy doing this for the rest of my life.
Wow. So when you go to me, when you're actually dealing with a publisher itself, now you become your own business because you get to negotiate. And
yes.
I'm sure they have to – how do you negotiate with them? So they say, hey – you're unpublished author and blah, 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 blah. And is there any negotiation with them?
It depends. It really does. It depends on the house. It depends on if you have any history. When you publish with the Big Six in New York, basically it's a lot harder than if you were to go with, say, a smaller indie house. The bigger houses, first of all, they're kind of... when they do a first run on your book, you have like 4 to 6 weeks to sell enough to make them want to print more. And the downfall is if you're a first-time writer, that's not necessarily going to happen. You know what I mean? It's harder to get enough people in 4 to 6 weeks to buy your first book.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is if you don't sell it and they decide not if you don't sell enough and they decide not to post, not to keep it running, they put it in their vault and you can't do anything about it. So you're kind of stuck with, you have a book, it was printed, but now it's not printed because it didn't sell enough. And now it's locked away in their vault for however long you have, managed to contract with them for. Now, a lot of people are going indie houses because there's more flexibility. Once you're published with an indie house, you can find your book will be online 5 years later, even if you had sold fewer copies.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are more attracted to that because the truth about publishing books is the more books you write and publish, the more books you sell because, people will read one book and go back and look at your other books. But if your other books aren't in print, then there's nowhere to go to read it. You know what I'm saying? So that's one of the reasons a lot of people are liking the indie houses. As far as the self-publishing goes, that's kind of become a huge phenomenon. It's also opened a lot of worm traps at the same time, which is, you do get to choose your, you know, how much you're going to sell your book for. You get to make all the profits and so forth. But also, you're responsible for it. So if you don't get it proper edited, you don't choose the best possible cover, whatever the, you know, whatever the different things are, there's no one to blame if it doesn't sell. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You kind of have to be, if you're going to self-publish, you have to be a business. You have to get up every day. You have to promote your books. You have to work on your next book. You have to follow trends. So there's a lot of work that goes into it. But if you're devoted enough, you can do really well at it. Indie houses, as far as money goes, and, you know, there is flexibility in contract negotiations, but then you'll always find there's certain spots where they're not flexible on.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the hardest part. The one thing I had to do, I researched entertainment contracts before signing, because if you don't know the terminology or if you don't know what should or shouldn't be in that contract, you could get yourself in a lot of trouble.
Okay.
So
did you hire yourself an attorney?
I think it's a good idea to.
Okay.
I don't think it's a bad idea to get professional advice on it, because you're signing away not just your product, but you're signing over your name as well. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You're putting your name on their website, and you're backing this company. And if you haven't researched it properly, you could be backing the wrong sort of company, if that makes mm-hmm. any sense.
Any horror stories out there that any colleagues that you ran into that have had issues with, you know, what to look for in publishing companies? Because you have a lot of independents today.
There's a lot of independents, a lot of indie houses. As far as horror stories, the only one I heard of was, but it wasn't the house itself. It was someone had posted their story via, I don't know if it was a blog or some internet site, but they had posted a story. Someone else took the story off the internet, pitched it to a publishing house, and the publishing house took it, not knowing it wasn't hers.
Wow.
But once the real author went to the publishing house and showed them the blog dates, they instantly pulled the book, because that's plagiarism. And plagiarism right now is really, really hard. A lot of people, like, especially with online things, a lot of people now will get their hands on an ebook and put it up on a sharing site,
mm-hmm.
which is illegal, because that product was gifted to one person, like, say, through, you know, an ARC, which is an advanced reader's copy, or, you know, they purchased it on Smashmouth or whatever. Then they will turn around and upload it onto this website where thousands of people can read it for free. But that's considered illegal. So if, like I was saying, where if you're in business for yourself and you self-publish, you have to monitor these things. You have to check all the sharing sites and make sure your book hasn't ended up on them.
Wow. So any sharing site that stands out that they really need to take a look at?
I'm sorry, any what?
Any sharing sites they can go and look for that they can use as a source of trying to see if their stuff is listed?
Oh, just Google it. Google the book title. Seriously, I Google my book titles at least once a week, because anything that's listed my book will show up. And it'll show blog sites, blog reviews, sharing sites. Then it'll show the regular sites, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu.com, Smashwords, anyone like that that has my book listed, the legit sites, will also be there. So Googling your book once a week is actually a really good thing besides the fact you could be saving yourself money. Is also you could be finding yourself free promotion because some book blogger may have read that book, gave you a wonderful review, but if they don't know where to find you, like say Facebook or Twitter, they'll just write the review and post it. And if you don't Google it, you don't find it. So once you find it, you can go out and you can tweet and tell everybody on Facebook, look at, go read this review on my book, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Google, believe it or not, is a great resource for writers. It really is. Self-business, pretty much any business. If you want to know what someone's saying about you or, you know, your company, Google it.
Wow. And it was originally designed for academia anyway, so I guess it's just really fulfilling its purpose.
It really does. I use Google for so many different things. Like if I'm researching, like I had told you I'd written the book series called Mocked by Faith, which is a series about a fictional couple who believe in arranged marriages. It happens in the United States, the book. And so to do it, I wanted to, check out marriage agreements and so forth. You would not believe it still happens in the United States. The people here do arranged marriages. It's just not said. You know, someone will say to you, I'm getting married next week. I have to go home to my mother's. I'll be back with my wife in a couple of weeks, you know, whatever. They just don't say the marriage was arranged by my parents. And a lot of them are happy with it that way, as it should be. You know, if it's their faith, if it's their beliefs or whatever, they have every right to do it, and they should be happy that it's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the whole reason behind the Mocked by series. All have secondary reasons behind them. With Mocked by Destiny, I wanted to show a raw and realistic light on teen pregnancy. Even my editor asked me if I really wanted it to be that honest. And I said, if it's not that honest, I'm not doing it. So basically, you know, Mocked by Faith was the same thing. When I had started writing it, so many people had been looking at, like, say, different religions,
mm-hmm.
and actually, you know, like, speaking out against them. And it's like, I'm sorry, if you're not Protestant, don't speak out against them. If you're not Catholic or Christian or whatever, you have no right to violate what their beliefs are. It's everybody's right to have a belief and an opinion. And we should be happy that they're happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really see any difference. I don't know what the divorce rate it is with them, but I don't think it's not worse than what we already have today.
I don't think it is at all. One of the women I interviewed, her marriage was arranged, and they just celebrated their 40th.
Yeah, I just want to see the divorces. I think they made this, really look at the couples, I think, across the board. I mean, they look really compatible. I mean, I guess the parents did a good job, but...
See, that's what it is. Parents remove that emotional aspect.
Mm-hmm.
When they're matching up their children, they look at the broad picture. It, like looking at a modeling portfolio, you know what I mean? They're seeing this whole broad picture of, you know, likes, dislikes, school grades for intelligence, health records. You know what I mean? They're looking at this whole broad picture and seeing if it compares to their child. You know what I mean? And they're taking out that emotional attachment where, you know, so many times you've heard girls walking down the street, oh, I don't like him, he has blue eyes. Okay, first of all, when does blue eyes have anything to do with the person? Right, red hair or, you know what I mean, whatever that, you know, that small little trait they pick up on that they, oh, I just don't like that. But their parents remove that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, you're walking into this marriage and you know your parents have, you know, thoroughly searched out this person. and it's the belief of their faith that this person is just right for you. So, yeah, you know, it's quite a unique thing. But like I was saying, Google, seriously, you will not believe some of the things you can find on Google, and I absolutely adore it because I can find pretty much anything I want at a moment's notice.
Mm. You know, in taking that account, I mean, just going back from that, just want to segue to that conversation. You know, really look at you, I don't think you would have as conflicts within families because now the family is now taking responsibility, part of that relationship to make it work. So
exactly.
I don't think they're going to give, okay, I'm not going to have, I might be a little bit mad, but I actually help arrange this. So, you know, I'm not going to give her or him a hard time because I'm partially responsible because they didn't make that choice.
Yeah, no, they take a lot of, the parents in my story take a lot of responsibility for the matching because they were the ones who did the selecting.
Yeah.
And they knew when they went into this that this was the person that the person they were selecting was going to be the one person they were entrusting their daughter to or son to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They were handing over the care to someone they believed in. So there is a lot less of that. The mother-in-law doesn't like that he sits around and puts his feet up on the coffee table. Because you know what? Mom and dad helped pick that person. So they can't
mom
complain.
And dad, and of course mom and dad is going to be moving in. So that counts, that's just, you already know that story, how it's going to play out at the very end. So just, you already accepted that. But anyway, I guess to close out, I guess to talk about your books, where we can find your books.
My books can be
closing thoughts about your book.
Sure. My books can be found on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can be found on Barnes & Noble. Let's see. I have a few on Smashwords. Pretty much if you Google the titles, Mocked By series, Parasols, or Life is More Than Candy Hearts, or if you Google my name, Michelle with one L Richard, you can pretty much find me almost everywhere. Seriously, if there's a book site, I'm usually on it. Goodreads, you can find me on Goodreads, Facebook, Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to chat with people, so anybody who hits me up can feel free to say hello because I love to talk to people.
Wow. Well, again, thank you for coming on to the show. I mean, it's been a real delight, and I'm going to check out your books and peruse through them and see if I can find them and read through them. But good luck on all your projects coming forth. Anything in the works right now?
Like I said, mm-hmm. I have my summer anthology coming out.
Okay.
I'm also going to be writing Mocked by Fate, which will be a story about, it goes back to being a young adult, story about bullying in high school.
Oh, wow.
So that'll be, I'm working on that one. Working on the second Parasols and Mocked by Fate 3, Affirming the Faith, is just finished. And I'm tinkering with a few other ideas while I'm at it.
Wow.
I have a few more. I have another science fiction that I'm going to be trying after I'm done with this one.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on the program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll check out your books, and you can find your books on Amazon, of course, and Barnes & Noble, and the major places. And
yes.
The name of your publisher again is?
I actually publish with two different houses. I publish with the Writer's Coffee Shop Publishing House
mm-hmm.
and Renaissance Romance Publishing.
Wow.
So you can find me on both their sites.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for coming on to the program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Have a great one, Michelle.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This episode can be downloaded on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or blog.apple capital group. Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet, and have a great day.
Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.